In the construction business and can't find what you need? Quality Supply and Tool has served Hoosiers for over a quarter of a century. Tom Hawk is the branch manager of the Indy location on South Harding Street.
We've always been big on keeping our shelves fully stocked of inventory of industrial-grade tools, concrete, masonry products, as well as the necessary accessories to help get the job done. You don't have it, you can't sell it. Our experience allows us to help with getting the pros as well as the weekend pro taken care of.
Quality Supply and Tool also has locations in Bloomington, Lafayette, and Jeffersonville to help you think outside the box store.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it.
Beyond the Bricks with Jay Query and Mike Thompson on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Hi there, good evening to you on what has been a gorgeous Wednesday in Indianapolis, but the odds are very high that you may be listening to Beyond the Bricks in podcast variation. And the fact that it is a Wednesday, the 8th of May, and episode number 3 of Beyond the Bricks probably is irrelevant to you. You simply know it as episode number 3 in this, the 2024 installment of the retroactive look at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway through audio, if you will. Oftentimes, the stories of the figures in the race in their own words, as we like to say. My name is Jake Query, and we do this each and every night, leading up to the greatest spectacle in racing. This, of course, the 108th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race that will be taking place in just a couple of weeks. And joining me on the program each and every night when we do this is Mike Thompson, who probably is going to be embarrassed when I say this, but I'll go ahead and let the cat out of the bag for everybody. The last that I talked to Mike, he was getting ready to drill into the dentist chair and was nervous that he was going to be thick-tonguing it all night long. I don't know if actually he's just been at, maybe a pub all night, and that's his excuse. But he joins us now, and Mike, first things first, everything feeling okay?
Everything is not feeling okay, I can tell you that. But I did make it out of the dentist chair, but it was not a fun day. And unfortunately, I have to go through it again next week. But I did make it. But everything is not currently feeling okay.
Well, you sound okay for what that's worth, right?
Yeah, I sound better than I did earlier today when I couldn't move most of the one side of my mouth. So,
were you like Kramer on Seinfeld when he goes to the dentist? You couldn't hold the water?
Yeah, it was a bit of a mess earlier. So,
Mike, we do this program throughout the course, and this, of course, not the first year that we've done this. And typically, Beyond the Bricks airs on our sister station, 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis, which is where I do the midday show, Query and Company, from noon until 3. But, of course, today we have moved over across the hall to our flagship station, if you will, one of them, WIBC, 93.1 WIBC in Indianapolis, and that is because airing on The Fan tonight is game number 2 between the Indiana Pacers and the New York Knicks. And, folks, here's the thing. Before, and I can hear you. I can hear you. I can see you. I can sense you right now in your car saying to yourself, I forgot the game is on. I'm going to switch over. The game has not yet begun, and the game will still be there at 9 o'clock when we sign off tonight. But we, however, will not. We'll only be here for an hour, so we ask that you stick around. But, Mike, the fun thing about this is the reality is that talking about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and talking about the Indianapolis 500-mile race is only fitting when on 93 WIBC, because the heritage, the history of this radio station and its connection to the Indianapolis 500-mile race seemingly is as much a part of that venue as bringing in your own coolers or hearing back home again in Indiana.
That's absolutely right. And I was very excited when you told me we were going to be on WIBC a few times this week, because I love WIBC. I've loved WIBC since I was a kid. I was fortunate to work at WIBC full-time, and I still work at WIBC in a couple different capacities, producing Heroes of the 500 and some other things that I do for WIBC. So I was really excited to kind of, I immediately tweeted out, I'm coming home, you know, because I think of WIBC as home. And so I was really excited about this show. But you're right, WIBC has such an important legacy as far as the Speedway Radio Network comes into play and things like that. And it's really important to celebrate, you know, all of the contributions folks from WIBC have made to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and to the 500.
You know, with that, Mike, to go back, I guess, just to put a personal touch on it, for me, a native of Indianapolis, and by no means in any way, shape, or form do I say this to make, you know, myself part of the show today, but to offer perspective for some of our out-of-town listeners, which I think in particular in podcast form, there are a fair amount. But for those that may be unfamiliar with it, the WIBC radio in Indianapolis is one of the true heritage radio stations. And it served as, in its 1070 AM radio days, the flagship for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, which we'll get into that in a bit in terms of some of the personalities that go into and everything that was a part of the promotion, really, quite frankly, of the Indianapolis 500 mile race. But for me personally, and I know for you as well, Mike, there was a great reverence, respect, and passion for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network and its ability to let people around the world know about what was happening in the greatest race in the world. And the theater of the mind that was created by the legendary broadcasters of yesteryear on that network, and still to this day, are a major part of the archive and the legacy of the event. Whether it be online, whether it be buying, obviously, like streamed versions of old races, Mike, I think there are still people that enjoy listening to races from the 50s and the 60s and hearing not only the great names of the drivers, but also hearing the names of the broadcasters, the skill set of the broadcasters, the delivery of the broadcasters, and the abilities of the broadcasters, and also hearing and seeing those things evolve as the racing and the speeds evolved as well.
That's right. And the thing that I think is interesting is there are so many different layers to some of these folks. You know, I mean, we could talk about Sid Collins all night, obviously, and we have on this show several times, but I mean, Sid wasn't just the voice of the 500. Sid was selling advertising at WIBC. He was on air at WIBC, but he was also one of WIBC's and top salesmen. And in fact, he was the top salesman at one point at WIBC. In addition, he was hosting other programs. You know, I mean, he was, you know, doing Captain Sid's treasure hunt and all those type of things, you know. So there was so many different layers to some of these folks. You know, Jim Shelton, I mean, he had kind of some variety shows, but you know, he was also, you know, doing Turn 4 on the Speedway Radio Network. So I think you're right. It's interesting, I think, for people to hear some of these folks and all these different roles they had. And I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to kind of celebrate WIBC tonight and celebrate some of the folks that, you know, made their mark on the Speedway and the Speedway Radio Network.
I was fortunate enough this morning, by the way, to be able to do kind of an annual event, the beginning of the month of May, breakfast with the members of the IMS Radio Network that included Paul Page, who was there, and it included Wally Levitt, the general manager emeritus of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. Chris Pollack, his successor, was there as well. But it was when I began at WIBC back in 2007 that door was open for me to join the network via Wally Levitt, and I will forever be grateful for that. Mike, I know that you have also been a part of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network and what that means to you. But tonight is not about the two of us, but rather about those that laid the groundwork and making that network what, of course, it has become in its contribution to motorsports. And we'll begin that conversation, speaking of WIBC and the IMS Radio Network and the broadcast of the Indianapolis 500, talking about a guy that was born in Wheeling, West Virginia, but for the most part made his home as a child in Syracuse, New York. And then in 1953, moved to Indianapolis and began a career in news radio at WIBC. And the reality is, Mike, that many of the names and faces that we know from yesteryear in broadcasting the Indianapolis 500 were not actually initially sportscasters per se, but rather those that read the news on WIBC. And that includes the subject that we open with tonight.
That's right. We're going to talk about Lou Palmer, but Paul Page, that was a similar situation for Paul Page. Paul Page, you know, started at WIBC in news and then got the opportunity with the radio network. The same thing for Lou Palmer. Lou Palmer started at WIBC in the 50s and was doing news. And that's when Sid Collins asked him to join the Speedway Radio Network and gave him a first opportunity there.
One of the things that Sid Collins took great pride in was being, I think, to a great extent, even though this was before my time, and I did not know Sid Collins, disingenuous to imply that I did, but have worked with many a people who did know him and were around him. And Sid, I think, took great pride in being kind of the talent scout of determining who he thought would be an asset to helping out the broadcast of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. This was at a time, folks, before the way that we know it today. Back in the initial days of the race broadcast, they did not obviously have electronic timing and scoring. They did not have the ability to be able to immediately look at a monitor and find out who was running in seventh or eighth position, what the time variation was between cars. Rather, when they were in the IMS Pagoda, there were a network of people that worked for Sid Collins that would go down to a different floor to find out a printout of the ticker tape of the running order and come back up and let them know. It was at times an archaic way of keeping track of the race, but at the same time, it was a calculated and orchestrative way of keeping track of the race. And those listening on the radio would not have known that things perhaps were at times as chaotic or as elusive of information as they were. That was the beauty of the broadcast itself. And it came by utilizing a number of different people and using them in different areas of the racetrack. Sid Collins took great pride in being the one that would make that phone call. And for many, you had arrived in Indianapolis when you got the phone call that it was your opportunity to join the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. Some a half a decade after Lou Palmer had arrived in Indianapolis from Syracuse, New York, he got the phone call in 1958 to join the 1958 Indianapolis 500-mile race. Reality is, he was the rookie, Mike, that kind of like the kid you put in left field in Little League, you put them in an area where you don't think the ball is going to come very often. But Lou Palmer, even though he was placed in an area where they didn't think perhaps his number would be called a lot during the broadcast, turns out he was pretty important in year number one, right, Mike?
That's right. He was put in turn three, and it was because, quote, nothing ever happens up there. And something that year really big happened, unfortunately, that affected a lot of lives. And Lou Palmer had to immediately, I mean, the first thing that he ever said on the radio network is one of the most important calls in the history of the radio network.
It happened in the 1958 Indianapolis 500-mile race. Here's how it sounded on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network with Lou Palmer in turn, in turn number three, right?
That's correct.
Here we go, 1958.
We've got an accident here. Car number five. Car number five, the Zinc Special, is the first to wreck. Another over the wall. And we've got one, two, three, four, five, six cars piled up here on the northeast turn. The 54 Novi into the infield. Car number 19 in the infield. 68 now down into the infield. And it's almost impossible to identify the others. Out of car number five now, it's Ed Elysian. And car number 91 against the wall. That is all that we can see at the moment. Further down the track, there are still others. One car has left this track, Sid, and did go over the retaining wall. That's all of the information that we can give you at the moment. We will check each and every car for you and report on all of them as soon as we can.
And the reality is, Mike, we're talking about an accident at the outset of the race that, as you talked about, affected not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven, but eight different drivers to begin the 1958 Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Yeah, and not only did it affect some drivers, you know, their chances of winning, but obviously we lost the great Pat O'Connor in that accident. And there were people, you know, I had people tell me this story, and I've relayed this story a couple times, I think, on the show, that when they heard that Pat O'Connor passed away from that accident, they got up and they left the speedway and they never came back, because that's how popular and beloved Pat O'Connor was. He was just one of the most popular drivers. He's an Indiana guy and just beloved. And just when that accident happened, it took the wind out of the sails of a lot of folks. And some folks just said, that was it. I'm not coming back, because they lost Pat O'Connor. But, great reporting on the scene. You know, Lou Palmer's put in a position. And that's one of the things, I think Paul Page told me this in an interview I did with Paul Page. It alludes back to, Jake, to what you just said a little bit ago about being a news reporter. You know, Lou Palmer was a news reporter, so he was able to do an on the scene, here's what happened report of that accident that happened directly in front of him. And Paul Page was very good at that as well, because of the fact that they had that news training and that news background. So the news background really helped Lou Palmer on that day.
Dick Rathman, you heard him mention Ed Elysian, Pat O'Connor, Paul Goldsmith, Jerry Unser, Lynn Sutton, Art Beach, all involved in that accident in 1958. And as you had talked about, the horrific nature, of course, of Pat O'Connor. And Mike, the sad reality, but it is a reality, especially in those days, about racing, was that it was not foreign, of course, to have a fatal injury at the Indianapolis 500-mile race. And it was also not unusual to hear of those people who were impacted as such that it caused them to not want to or not return to the Indianapolis 500-mile race back in those days. But unfortunately, it was a reality. As I have always said, as Paul Page said, without the danger, the men are just ordinary. And the danger back then was always there. And the ability and the skill and the importance of broadcasters to share that information and do so in a concise and professional manner was really a testament to the craft under which they worked so expertly. Palmer would eventually move, by the way, from turn three and become a pit reporter in 1963. So in his sixth year on the network, and he would go on to work in the pits for 24 years, some of his finest moments and finest interviews coming in that capacity. There was another big accident that happened in 1966 in the Indianapolis 500-mile race. And once again, Lou Palmer was the man who shared the information with the audience.
We have an accident on the main stretch, Mike. Hold it. We have a terrible accident on the main stretch. A very bad accident on the main stretch before they reach the turn. Lou Palmer is closest to them. We can't count how many
folks
cars
are out of the
involved.
Race. Number 39, also out. Number 96, parked against the wall. All drivers seem to be getting out of the equipment that's parked immediately in front of us here. And we note that Bobby Grimm, all right, here comes out of the All-American Racers Special, another of the competitors. Further down the track, beyond our view, entering the number one turn, Mike Ahearn will be checking for you. We've got fire foam going on one of the pieces of equipment that is just at the beginning of the turn, and I won't attempt to identify that one for you at this time. We will make a check immediately and return to you, Sid, as soon as we can.
Lou, we'll have to rely on you. Len and I have our glasses up here. We'll try to check, but of course, as always, striving for accuracy will not give you any information until it's officially released.
Again, Sid Collins, but Lou Palmer, the primary voice you hear on that, the broadcast of the 50th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race on May 30th of 1966. That accident that happened at the outset of the race, again, taking out a number of cars. Don Branson was involved, Billy Foster, Gary Congdon, A.J. Foyt, Dan Gurney, major names, Cale Yarborough, Al Miller, Bobby Grimm, Larry Dixon. There were a number of drivers, but I think most importantly, Mike, what you heard there was the thought process of being able to relay the information. The most critical thing was to make sure that it was accurate. And in those moments when things are happening so fast, the professionalism and the presence of mind to be able to wait, to be able to give the information once you know the accuracy of the information, as opposed to the rapid nature of the information, is something that I think really separated those men in that era.
That's right. And Sid, that was the biggest thing Sid would mention on the broadcast every year. We strive for accuracy. We're not going to give you any information until we've checked and double checked this information. But one of the things I love about that clip that we just played is Lou Palmer. He immediately runs over the wall. And the first thing he's doing is, these are the cars I see that are out of the race. Here's guys getting out of the cars. They look like they're okay. You know, I mean, he's immediately giving you, you know, on the spot factual information. So another example of what you talked about earlier about, here's a guy who has news reporter training and, you know, he's putting it to good work in that accident there.
When we come back, that good work when it comes to Lou Palmer and WIBC went beyond just simply the broadcasts of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. There were other duties that would evolve in terms of being a member of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network and different days and capacities with which he delivered it. That is something that we will look forward to next in talking about some of the personalities on this station, WIBC, and its contribution to the Indianapolis 500-mile race in this episode number 3 in 2024 of Beyond the Bricks.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
WIBC ad from Mike. What year was that? That is clearly not 2010. That would have been when?
Hey,
do we have Mike? Mike, what year was that WIBC spot that we just heard?
1970. Didn't you play that on your show earlier today?
1970 was the spot. Did not, to my knowledge, play it on the show earlier today. But nonetheless, you could tell the yesteryear jingles of WIBC, and that's what we're talking about because Lou Palmer was one of the primary voices on WIBC in terms of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. And again, in addition to calling the race on the radio, Mikey had other responsibilities aside from just race day as not only a newsman for WIBC but a member of the radio network.
Yeah, one of the most important things he did was anchor coverage on WIBC of qualifying, and that was one of the things that Donald Davidson has told me several times he enjoyed so much, was working with Lou Palmer covering qualifying, doing the, you know, the long form qualifying coverage that WIBC would do in those days, you know, each qualifier, and it was basically him and Lou Palmer just doing each qualifier.
And of course, as we talked about, it was not unusual, sadly, or uncommon for broadcasters to have to deliver bad news when it came to racing, especially in that era. Art Pollard is a driver who had made 5 Indianapolis 500-mile race starts, and he was qualifying on May 12th of 1973 at Indianapolis, or attempting to qualify, when he was fatally injured at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It was one of the topics that Lou Palmer would have to report on and discuss in 1973.
And now back to the 500-mile qualifications and Lou Palmer. Situation now, the track is open for practice. Indeed, since the halftime in the Pacers game, the only activity that we could pass along to you would be, well, we'll get to it all. At the moment, let us accomplish what has just occurred and then back up from there. A.J. Foyt has now qualified his Coyote, and at a disappointing speed for Foyt. There was a problem with the car. It was mechanical, and though we are not absolutely clear, it would almost seem to be related. It would almost seem to have to be related to a turbocharger situation, a matter of boost, a matter of getting the engine RPMs up to where it was necessary. There is wind, but it does not account for Foyt's 188.927 miles an hour. The entry number is 14, and Foyt has qualified for what at the moment is the 19th starting berth in a field of 20. Only Sam Posey's run has been slower at 187.921 miles an hour. There is the other ingredient of the day that saw new records set in terms of qualifying, but also saw a death at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. For those who may not have been aware earlier, it occurred in practice this morning, a practice period before the qualifications began at 11 o'clock, actually slightly delayed from that point, between 9 and 10:30, the practice time was allowed. And in the middle of that practice period, a car moved into the number one turn and then suddenly darted to the outer retaining wall, bounced, flipped in the air. There was fire. Was rushed to the hospital. Art Pollard was pronounced dead this morning at 10:40. A fine competitor, a fine man. Art Pollard, dead as the result of injuries suffered in practice this morning at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Again, that was 1973. 1973 was a significant year for Lou Palmer when it comes to his time on the radio network. Because back in those days, and certainly in 1973, there was plenty of opportunity for the following event, and that was when there would be a long break in the action due to a rain delay, for example, which we all know in 1973, that fateful year of the Indianapolis 500-mile race, that there were several of those, the race being delayed, of course, on numerous occasions because of Mother Nature, on a year that many will tell you is one that oftentimes people will say, and I always thought it was significant for Gordon Johncock to win a second Indy 500 9 years later, because you almost were glad that Gordon Johncock's lone Indy 500 win would not have been that race, the 57th running of the Indy 500 in 73, because there were so many bad things that happened over the course of that year, including Mother Nature. But it was significant for Lou Palmer because during extended rain delays, Sid Collins would hand the microphone over to Lou Palmer, who would get his chance then to fill in as the anchor of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway radio network.
Now, to those stations on the line, we would like to advise you, and here in Indianapolis, it is now just before the hour of 1 o'clock, we will give you information for your purposes and your own planning purposes at 1 o'clock, at 1:15, at 1:30, and also at 1:40. Aha, you note a time that is a little different than the others. There is the possibility that at 1:40 we may have something of more significance to tell you, such as that we will be resuming program in the immediate future. But we will keep you all advised. You may feel free to pass this information along to your listeners. We can only tell you now that they are continuing to circle the track, the fire trucks, the tow trucks, the safety equipment. John DeCamp is continuing to look down and frown at the forecast I forced him to read to you, because I would not be bearer of that tidings. And to our gentlemen around the track, I do suggest, if there is any possible way, make yourself comfortable. We'll talk to you later. We thank Mike Ahern, Ron Carroll, Doug Zink, and we thank thousands and thousands of race fans for remaining here in the stands and waiting for the event along with us. If there is to be no event, there is a phrase that misery loves company, and this is not the most pleasant place at the moment. So we will again, for stations down the line, have advisory information for you regarding programming this day, hopefully still this race today, at 1 o'clock, 1:15, 1:30, and 1:40. And then we'll go from there at what may be the greatest spectacle in weather at the moment. At the moment, this is the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Network.
Of course, that 1973 race would almost go into June, not quite. It ultimately ran on Wednesday, May the 30th of 1973. Again, Mother Nature playing a factor. Gordon Johncott getting the win after completing 133 laps. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, its connection to WIBC is our subject tonight here on Beyond the Bricks. And when we come back, the man that was the originator of all of it, including the most famous phrase that is now still uttered by the chief announcer of the IMS Radio Network. That and more when we come back to Beyond the Bricks.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between. Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Get the best of good meat flavor, good meat nourishment. Get, yes, Stark and Wetzel luncheon meats. Choice luncheon meat favorites that are delicatessen fresh and delicious as can be. Every wonderful variety, from Stark and Wetzel Bologna to tempting honeybee loaf, brings you this four-fold assurance of highest quality. First of all, they're made from the finest U.S. government-inspected meat, rich in protein and B vitamins, deliciously spiced and cooked to mellow perfection. Second, they're carefully tested and controlled to meet the most rigid standards of freshness, leanness, nourishing goodness. Third, every package you choose carries a written money-back guarantee of satisfaction. And last but not least, Stark and Wetzel luncheon meats have earned the Good Housekeeping seal. Remember this assurance of quality the next time you choose luncheon meats. And get the best of flavor, nourishment, and variety with Stark and Wetzel luncheon meats.
Radio Indiana. WIBC, Indianapolis.
The legendary ID of this radio station, WIBC, and then in 1963, Sid Collins with the Stark and Wetzel commercial. My name is Jake Query. Mike Thompson joins me as well here on Beyond the Bricks, the show tonight being produced by Elijah Robertson, who I can tell you gets the Good Housekeeping seal of approval, which is, of course, what everybody wants when it comes to broadcasting. Talking tonight about the names that you hear broadcasting the Indy 500 and their contribution and legacy at WIBC Radio, the radio station that we are on tonight, even though WIBC transitioned from 1070 AM to 93.1 FM some 17 years ago. But before we get to the guy who put together kind of the radio network and was the architect of all of this, Sid Collins, that we talked about, you heard that ad from 1963. It was 3 years after that when Graham Hill would take the Indianapolis 500 by storm. Of course, winning the Triple Crown in motorsport ultimately in his career. One of those steps, the Indianapolis 500, which he won as a rookie in 1966. And it was Lou Palmer who interviewed him.
Graham, we congratulate you thoroughly. In London, they're able to hear you right now at this moment. What have you to say? You know, rookies don't win here.
I'm rather surprised to have won, but naturally I'm very pleased to have done so.
Not a surprise. An excellent run and a fine follow-up to that third at Monaco. Can we expect you back here at the 500?
Hey! Yes, I expect so if I get invited.
You know who was running number two when we finished this run today?
No, I have no idea.
Jimmy Clark, I believe, running second to you.
Well, I'm very impressed, and the car ran beautifully. I had a very steady run and pretty uneventful except for the mishaps earlier on.
This hustle-bustle on the first lap, how deeply involved in that were you?
Well, I didn't get involved, but I seemed to be in the middle of it. I was busy trying to avoid the cars and the wheels and the half shafts and various other bits that were flying around. I thought I was being bombed, in fact.
So you were truly in the center of this 10-car spiral up here?
Well, it would appear so. I was very fortunate.
Graham, what are your plans now? Back to the Grand Prix circuit?
Yeah, I've got to go back to test the BRM fairly shortly.
Ultimately, Lou Palmer, who you heard there interviewing Graham Hill, would become himself the chief announcer of the Indianapolis 500 and Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. He would succeed Paul Page, who, of course, had taken over for Sid Collins. More on that in just a moment. But once Paul Page moved to ABC Television, Lou Palmer would become the chief announcer, serving it for 2 years in 1988 and 1989. His first year as the chief announcer at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the 72nd running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race, and this is how he began things on May 29th of 1988.
They are here. They come here every May. They will be 1 hour from now at the center of the auto racing universe. They have come 71 times before and written history at this, the greatest race course in the world. We don't yet know how many pages today's chapter will take. We do know today's event is scheduled for 200 laps, 500 miles. 33 drivers are at this moment preparing for the adventure. And we on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, along with you, are preparing to focus on this one-of-a-kind event. It's race day in Indianapolis.
That's how it sounded back in 1988, one of 2 years in which Lou Palmer would serve as the chief announcer of the IMS Radio Network, the chief historian emeritus of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Donald Davidson on Lou Palmer.
Well, he'd been on the network for a number of years, and honestly, people thought that even when Sid was still doing it, that Lou would be the heir apparent, and it ended up that Paul Page succeeded Sid, and then when Lou came in, he did it for 2 years, and for some reason it just didn't seem to gel. I don't know that he got along with management very well yet, and Lou is a very complex man and very much his own person, and I think he really wasn't prepared to do a lot of the things that you have to do.
And with that, Mike, I think what Donald is alluding to there, and I've had conversation with some of the others that have been in that chief announcer seat. Sid Collins, for example, was somebody that was always involved seemingly around town at emceeing events and, glad handing and promoting the radio network. I think that Lou Palmer, a little bit more reserved, and doing those things outside of the booth weren't necessarily his flavor.
Yeah, there's a lot more to being the voice of the 500 than just race day, and I agree. I don't know that Lou Palmer, that was something that he was really that interested in doing necessarily, and so, yeah, I agree. Maybe that was not necessarily the right fit for Lou Palmer.
And, of course, as we talked about, that element of the larger-than-life personality of the chief announcer, that precedent was set by Sid Collins, who really is the person who launched the radio network in 1952. In 1953, the radio network, the conglomerate of radio stations flagshipped by WIBC Radio, decided to broadcast the Indianapolis 500 live from flag to flag. Sid Collins was the chief announcer and had to let stations know when exactly to run their commercials, and this is how that sounded.
We'll be back with you, fans.
So that was obviously a less than exciting way to get into the breaks. So by 1954, Sid decided maybe we should do something different. And the owner of WIBC Radio at that time, Richard Fairbanks, agreed and decided, you know what, maybe we should come up with a different way to let stations around the country know when it was time for a commercial break. Donald Davidson with more on that.
WIBC was the flagship station. And so they sought input from the people that were carrying it. What suggestions do you have? Do you like it or would you change it in any way? And then apparently the number one request was, could there be a standard out queue? Because, you know, our man's in Omaha, Nebraska, or you know, Casper, Wyoming or something at a radio station. It's Memorial Day. And he maybe doesn't really know anything about racing, and he's sitting there waiting for a break. And if there's like a key phrase, he'll know to, stop reading the paper. It's time to hit the button. So anyway, then Richard Fairbanks, Mr. Fairbanks, owned WIBC, and apparently he came in to the jocks and the sales staff and said, all right, here's your mission. Come up with a phrase. So I think it's fair to say that Sid Collins popularized it, but apparently it was a lady named Miss Alice Bugner, I think, or Bugner was her maiden name. And she was sort of like a Girl Friday in the sales department, and she wrote copy. And apparently she came back one day and said, how about stay tuned to the greatest spectacle in racing? And Sid evidently said, my word, I think you've got something there. So they did it. And so, you know, all these years we thought it was 55, and just recently it came out, it was 54.
And in fact, this year on May the 31st, we will celebrate the 70-year anniversary, as a matter of fact, of that phrase, which has become not only synonymous with the Indianapolis 500-mile race, but obviously a catchphrase that I will tell you a little secret. Amongst those of us that work for the radio network, at least in the opinion of one turn announcer, I can tell you, it is my opinion that that phrase is reserved for just the chief announcer to use, Mark Janes being the installment of that in 2024. But if you go back to Very Rare, and Mike Thompson has the rarest of audio amongst his collection, it's what makes this show what it is, and he has unearthed rare audio once again. You can hear the moment 70 years ago this May the 31st in 1954 on the 38th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. You can hear what became the catchphrase for Sid Collins and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network.
Well, the only cars having trouble getting started for the pace lap were those driven by Ed Elysian and by Manny Ayulo. Ayulo in car number 88 seems to always have a great deal of trouble in getting underway in this 500-mile race. The time for the first lap was 1 minute and 8 seconds, the speed 131.004, which is considerably slower than 133.097. Here comes the next lap, and the same order. McGrath, number 2, 9, Bryan is second, 3rd, Johnny Thompson, in car number 43, 4th, number 19, Jimmy Daywald, 5th, number 34, Troy Ruttman, 6th, number 16, Dwayne Carter, 7th, number 98, Chuck Stevenson, 8th, number 1, AAA National Driving Champion, Sammy Hanks, 9th, number 7, Don Freeland. Those are the 9 first cars we spotted here on the 4th lap of this 200-lap drive. Now, fans, stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing.
And that right there was the cue that stations could run the commercials that they had slotted for the Indianapolis 500-mile race broadcast. And, Mike, whoever would have guessed back in 1954 that 70 years later it would still be the phrase that it's known today.
Yeah, and that's what's neat about that is that was the first time Sid ever said that on a race broadcast. And as Donald kind of alluded to in his soundbite, he was under the impression for years that it was 1955 it was the first time. And I actually found this audio one time talking to him, and I said, here's some stuff from the 54 race, and we listened to it together. And he said, there it is. That's the first time. And so that's when he changed and found out that it was actually 1954. So you're right. I mean, it's become a slogan that's absolutely is synonymous with the 500 worldwide.
There are so many things about the Indy 500 that make it so great. And one of those is the fact that, and I have said this before, you will hear me say it many, many more times. If you listen to the Indy 500 this year, you will hear me at some point reference the weather conditions. And it's because I like to think that maybe years from now, another installment of a Mike Thompson will be listening historically to the race and wondering what things were like in 2024. It's always fun to do it. We'll do it again tomorrow night, and we will end with this oh-so-famous jingle that all of you love from WIBC and Chuck Riley.
Radio Indiana. WIBC, Indianapolis.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.